Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. As noted during the handicapper's report earlier, a fun Saturday of racing with stakes action across the country. We'll be joined a little later by Ellis Starr from Equibase. He took a look at some of the Santa Anita stakes, so we'll cover some of that a little bit later on. But I also noted during the handicapper's report, stay tuned, top of the hour, our friend Joe Kristofek. You see him in the paddock down at Churchill doing the pregame and the pre-race commentary, and I thought we'd reach out to him to get some of the closing weekend stakes action thoughts. Joe, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. I thought after you had Scott on for Downs After Dark, I might be out of the rotation, but it's great to be back.
I said to Scott, happy to have him on because I enjoy watching, as I said to you many times, watching you guys down there pregame and in the paddock commentary as well, and I think you guys do a great job. So it was fun to have Scott on for the first time and gave out some good opinions as well, but you always do a great job, so we're happy to have you here. And I mentioned to Scott, and when I mentioned it, as soon as he said why, I thought, oh, of course. But I noted that you guys don't have the nice paddock backdrop behind you, but that's because there's crazy construction going on down there. The paddock, and I saw the seating on the clubhouse turn seems to be moving along pretty nicely as well.
It's amazing how they plan all this stuff out and how it all comes to fruition as smoothly as possible. The balcony that we used to be on is completely gone. It was completely destroyed, eliminated. It's all part of the new paddock construction, which will be unveiled for Kentucky Derby 150. And we're in a room called the Aristides Loft, which outside of Thanksgiving and Derby isn't really utilized all that much. I think the set looks really sharp. A little bit lacking in the human contact that I'm used to, but I try to get out of here a couple times a day, walk around, see some people, see some horses. So getting used to the new surroundings, but I think it looks good on TV.
It does look good on TV. Very good. And I can relate to the lack of human contact being in my studio most of the year as compared up in Saratoga, which is very, very different. But it does look good down there. And as I say, you guys do a great job. Let's set things up on the weekend a little bit. First of all, what's your weather look like for today and closing day tomorrow?
Man, we've been blessed the entire September meet. We've had a fast track every day. Much of the same today, beautiful fall temperatures, you know, upper 60s, low 70s. I believe the same for tomorrow, closing day. You know, then there's a few days hiatus before Keeneland opens up next weekend. Looking forward to that. Obviously, the march towards the Breeders' Cup with a lot of Breeders' Cup winning your in races across the country today, including the ACAC here at Churchill, which we'll talk about in a moment, winning your in for the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. And you have a closing date tomorrow, Seth. There'll be a force out at all of our pools, mandatory payoffs. We got a Derby City 6 carryover pool today of about $25,000 and a mandatory payoff on that tomorrow.
You know, you guys are always touting the Derby City 6, and for folks who maybe don't play that a lot around here, give that a little push again, because you guys are always talking about really one of the better jackpot bets.
I mean, all you got to do is look at the graphic that we come up with every day, showing you the sequence of winners and what it paid, because it's a 20-cent minimum wager with the 15% takeout. And I'm not a big fan of jackpot wagers, but the way it's done here, if nobody has a perfect ticket, it's a full carryover. If multiple winners hit, then 90% gets paid back, which with the 15% carryover certainly makes it worth your while. 10% gets carried over. So I really love the provisions. I'm not a fan of jackpot wagers. I honestly think this is the only one in racing worth playing on a day-to-day basis, particularly with that 20-cent minimum. So $25,000 in the carryover pool today, mandatory payout, like I said, tomorrow. But that 20-cent minimum, Seth, especially if you can get a single or two in the sequence, you can get a lot of coverage for, you know, $50, $100. And I've seen people hit it on $12, $18 tickets sometimes. So, yeah, big fan of the wager.
Yeah, at the 20 cents, you can get in, and you don't have to be a whale, but you can still have some nice coverage at that mark. So people should keep that in mind. Also, I pulled up the stats as we are coming into the final weekend. Thought it'd be interesting to talk on the human side. On the trainer side, Brad Cox with a little bit of a lead, 9 wins over Ken McPeak and Tommy Amos. They each have 6, so there's a 3-win lead there. But over on the jock side, the last couple of days could be interesting. Tyler Gaffleone gets back to Kentucky, and as he always does very well. He's got 10, but Flojo, Florent Giroux, also with 10. And Edgar Morales sitting with 9. There's also a couple of jocks with 8. So jocks battle's going to come right down to this last couple of days. That's always fun.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's a short September meet here. And Tyler's lost 2 days due to suspension for the HISA whip rule violation. So that's cost him probably a few winners. But Edgar Morales has been the breakout jockey this meet, teaming up with Tom Amos for, I think, all of his winners at the current stand, and he's riding in great form. He's won a couple of stake races at the meet. You know, he's a rider to watch moving forward. He did really well when he had the bug. Then he kind of evened out when he became a journeyman. But when you can ride first call for Tom Amos, not only going to do damage here in Kentucky, also Indiana Grand when he rides there sparingly, and the upcoming Fairgrounds meet, Edgar should be a major force as well.
And I'll also mention, it was a couple of days ago, and I mentioned it because I really like the first-time starter. Rusty Arnold gets a career milestone victory down at Churchill, a Churchill-based milestone.
Yeah, 400 wins at one track for a trainer is a lot. The 10th on the all-time list, and, you know, he's had, I think, 4 millionaires, 3 horses that were in within 50 grand of earning $1 million in his career. He just had a real solid, steady, productive career with a lot of classy horses, and you can depend on him. Second time starters, he does really well. He's got some good young horses in his barn, and you know, you caught 8-1 on that first timer the other day. He doesn't win with a lot of first time starters, Seth, but when he does, they normally pay well.
Yeah, I was perfectly happy with that, and I think part of that was he doesn't have standout numbers with firsters, but he can get it done. But, man, I had to sweat because that one came right down to the wire, but I was happy with the result. All right, let's get some people happy with the results today because, again, a couple of nice stakes here on this closing weekend Saturday. We'll kick things off with the Lucas Classic, field of 6 scheduled in here. I pulled up a replay of the Whitney. Life is Good's going in New York, but Happy Saver and Hot Rod Charlie wind up down in Kentucky. Life is Good's going to be the number 6 horse, Happy Saver the number 5, Hot Rod Charlie the number 2. I'm tilting slightly towards Hot Rod Charlie, but Happy Saver, obviously very dangerous. Art Collector coming out of the win most recently in the Charlestown Classic. And I'm really intrigued to see what the Derby winner, Rich Strike, can do, because I think he kind of validated his talent with the triple-digit fourth-place finish in the Traverse. What are your thoughts on the Lucas Classic?
Yeah, and Rich Strike likes this track. I mean, we all know he broke his maiden for $30,000, but he did it by 17 lengths, and then he won the Kentucky Derby. And I believe we haven't had a Kentucky Derby winner race here after winning the Derby since way back when Silver Charm did it. So we'll see if Rich Strike can be the next one to accomplish that feat. He's facing older horses for the first time. Very intriguing race. Art Collector has never lost going 9 furlongs in the United States. The only time he did was when he went over to Saudi. But like you said, Seth, Hot Rod Charlie, I think he's a better horse with blinkers. I think he's training great going into this race, and I think he's going to get the right trip, breathing down the neck of Art Collector in the early stages on the backstretch, potentially wear him down. Happy Saber's been running against, you know, the best horses in the division. You mentioned him going into the segment. Late closing kick should have an honest pace. But will he go by who's ever leading, you know, at the eighth pole? That's a question. And then Rich Strike, I mean, he's going to come running late. 9 furlongs at Churchill Downs should be his jam. I agree with you. I think he justified, you know, his Kentucky Derby win with a much better performance in the Travers than in the Belmont Stakes. You know, he was well beaten by Epicenter, the best 3-year-old in the country. These are tough older horses. This is going to be a tough ask. But like you said, I think that just adds a ton of intrigue to the Lucas Classic, a race that isn't a Breeders' Cup win-and-you're-in race, but it was won last year by Nick's Go, who did go on to win the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Which way are you going to tilt in here?
No, I'm with you. I'm going with with Hot Rod Charlie. I just think he's going to get the right trip. He, you know, has the blinkers on, the blinkers off, the blinkers on, the blinkers off. Hasn't exactly been a win machine, you know, as in relation to his class over the course of his career. But, you know, Art Collector on the lead, Hot Rod Charlie sitting just off of him. Those two are not going to battle each other in the submission. I think the pace will be reasonable. And I just think Hot Rod Charlie will wear down Art Collector in the stretch with Rich Strike and Happy Saber running late, but Hot Rod Charlie getting the jump.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. And again, I'm really intrigued to see what Rich Strike can do in here. Steps in against Older for the first time and gets back to Churchill. I had Eric Reed on with me on the backstretch up at Saratoga and had a fun conversation with him. So going to be intrigued to see what that one can do as well. All right, one race earlier. It is the Grade 3 ACK-ACK, $300,000 up for grabs. They'll go the one-turn mile. I'm going to take a little pop against Speaker's Corner, but I pulled up the Nehrud from Belmont back on July 2nd. The winner here is going to be Life is Good, running second. Number five will be Speaker's Corner. Three starts back, he finished third. Speaker's Corner, I'm talking about, behind Flight Line. So, boy, the losses to Flight Line and Life is Good. No shame there, but then followed it up with a disappointing effort, I thought, in the Pat O'Brien out at Del Mar. So I'm going to tilt slightly towards Untreated, but I am kind of rolling the dice because, again, you look at the company lines for Speaker's Corner, they're pretty good. Twilight Blue is the one I might play around with if I was looking for an absolute alternative. But what are your thoughts in the ACK-ACK?
Yeah, I mean, Speaker's Corner is the kind of horse you want to try to beat, right? You know he's going to be the favorite. It's a big field. But, you know, Seth, you look around and you just don't see a lot of speed in the race.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think Speaker's Corner has got to be on the lead. I think Injunction, who is a little bit interesting to me because I think he's better than his past performance lines indicate. That was a game win over West Willpower. Last out, West Willpower came back earlier this week at Churchill and won very impressively for Brad Cox. The race two back on July the 4th. He was left at the start and was hung wide that particular day. Was majorly compromised. Not going to hold that against him. And he should get a great trip either on the lead or probably just outside Speaker's Corner. But I think in the end, Speaker's Corner's class is going to show, you know, is he the kind of horse I'm going to single in the Derby City Six or the multi-race wagers? Probably not. I mean, some of the others I would use. Twilight Blue that you mentioned, he should get a great trip right off the speed. I'm also very intrigued by Untreated on the cutback. I think he's got good enough tactical speed to stay fairly close to the lead. I think the cutback to a mile, you know, might serve him well. Folsom is a horse that I've been in love with for a long time. He's got a scintillating late kick, but, you know, is he going to have enough speed to run at? And then Senior Buscador ran huge in that race at Del Mar, and he has a bad habit of breaking slowly from the gate, but he's been training here at Churchill for the better part of a month, so he should be acclimated, used to his surroundings. He's another one that I would not be surprised to run a big race. And then you saw, you know, Kobe's Wish out at Saratoga, you know, with an upset victory over Jackie's Warrior there. Three Technique gave him all he could handle in the Hanshin here at Churchill on July the 4th. So you really can't toss him out either. So there are viable alternatives to Speaker's Corner. If there was just a little bit more speed signed on here, I would think he would be a little bit more vulnerable. I'm going to give him the edge. But like I said, you know, if I play two tickets in the multi-race wagers, probably single him on one and spread on the other.
Yeah, and you mentioned Senior Buscador. Got a root for Todd Fincher after the Heisa violation that has him DQ'd from a Derby win out in Albuquerque. That's a tough decision there. So Senior Buscador, one that I'll be rooting for a little bit anyway. But a fun couple of stakes this weekend, closing weekend on this Saturday down at Churchill. But also wanted to get some opinions going back to last week at Churchill. And we talked about on the handicapping show earlier, Gunrunner, just phenomenal. I mean, Echo Zulu, Gunite last week, some really nice performances and stakes action down at Churchill last Saturday as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you talk to Steve Asmussen, he has a lot of the Gunrunners. And, you know, I know he's extremely happy about that, but he's also super proud of that horse becoming the stallion that he's become. I mean, he's the second coming of Into Mischief. I mean, that's that's basically what we're looking at. I mean, this is no fluke as a second crop stallion to have all that productivity that he has had in the last couple of years with his two-year-olds, now his three-year-olds. You never know who the great broodmares are going to be, and you really never know who the great stallions are going to be, but he stamped himself pretty quickly, and yeah, I wouldn't mind owning a piece of him, I'll tell you that.
And it was fun to see Echo Zulu, you know, get back on track down there. And as they say, Gunite, we've seen that one up here at Saratoga run well. So it was a fun weekend. And also, you have any thoughts on the Pennsylvania Derby and Taba? To me, that win makes the three-year-old picture kind of interesting. It adds some intrigue now maybe to the Breeders' Cup Classic that already had enough intrigue. But we'll see, you know, Flightline and maybe some up-and-coming three-year-olds and some horses coming out of this weekend. But I thought Taba's performance, as I say, added a little spice to the end of the year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been a huge Epicenter fan since, you know, watching him develop over the winter at Fairgrounds. I still think he's the best three-year-old in the country. I would love to see him give Flightline a run for his money in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Like you said, if all the stars align set, then all these horses actually do run in that race, you would think, you know, Flightline's going to be a heavy favorite, but man, he's got some good horses. Olympia adds a really good horse. We'll see what Life is Good does today and moving forward. It's a really, really good division. It could be one of the better Breeders' Cup Classics we've seen in a long time. You know, I thought Taba's performance was great, but I'm squarely on the Epicenter bandwagon.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, clearly Epicenter is the leader in the class, but it the win last week made it kind of intriguing, certainly, going into the last part of the year here in the Breeders' Cup Classic. Joe, before we let you go, always like to talk about your Brilliant Horse Racing partnership, and people can always go visit the website, brilliant horseracing.com, to learn more. But I've been following, you had a horse run yesterday at Churchill. You can talk a little bit about that, but also looking at your Twitter feed for Brilliant Horse Racing, I see you were active at the recent sales as well.
Yeah, we finally started a horse for Brilliant Racing 4 because we started doing yearlings, and we like to take our time with our babies. We had Don't Let Go debut for Michelle Lovell yesterday. We knew going into the race at 7 furlongs was going to be way too sharp for him. He broke out of the gate fine, but then he got pinched back and got a bunch of dirt in his face. He was last on the turn for home, and Gabe took him 7-8 wide. He passed a couple horses late, galloped out well. I mean, Michelle Lovell thinks that he might be a 9-furlong, mile-and-a-half horse as he, you know, continues to grow and mature. She said he didn't even get tired. We knew it was a starting point, a great way for him to learn some lessons in an actual race. So look forward to Don't Let Go stretching out in the near future. And then Brilliant 5, we bought 3 horses. We named the Louisiana bred that we bought after John G. Dooley, the track announcer. We named the horse the Duel Guru, and that horse will be, we had a plan to buy a Louisiana bred. There was a Louisiana bred that the Foleys had named the Roo Guru that John Dooley really liked, so we decided to buy a horse and name him the Duel Guru. So that horse will be in Louisiana to undertake the next step of the learning process. We bought a half-brother to White Abario by Lord Nelson in a partnership with a couple of others. And then we bought a Blame colt that we really like as well. So super exciting. We love the yearling sales. We love the journey, the development, and just crossing our fingers that, you know, we get a good 1, 2, or 3 out of this new batch of horses.
Yeah, and I saw that you're partnering up with West Point on at least one of them.
Yeah, we partnered up with West Point on the Louisiana bred, and we have a two-year-old in training with Greg Foley right now by the name of Big Sur that West Point is in. You know, they bought into Obesos with the Foleys and had a really good experience. And Jeff Lifson and Travis Foley get along really well. So, yeah, we partnered on a couple horses with them over the course of the last couple of sales. And, Seth, when we do this, you know, it allows us with our smaller budget to buy into better horses, have smaller bills to pay moving forward. You know, if we get – you know, a good amount of the controlling interest, that's basically what we're looking for. And, we operate really well with Travis and Greg Foley and Michelle Lovell as our trainers. So you live and you learn over time, and we're happy with the direction we're pointing in.
Yeah, we had Greg on with us up in Saratoga last year. We had Michelle this year after she had the nice stakes win up at Saratoga. Both great, and so happy to see you teamed up with them and having success. And once again, I'll mention the website, brilliant horseracing.com, because visiting that and looking at Twitter yesterday, you have some openings available. And I know a lot of local folks have been involved over the past few years, but if folks are looking maybe to explore partnerships, they should visit the website. And I'm guessing the contact information on there is the way to go.
Yeah, the Brilliant Five partnership, and we have bought these horses. Until we reconcile everything and come up with our total amount, like, we're still technically open, so anybody that would want to get in needs to do so, like, yesterday. I mean, contact me immediately. We still might be able to fit you in. But, yeah, the next partnership will be Brilliant Partnership 6, and that won't be, you know, until next summer when we open that one up.
Okay. But people, again, brilliant horseracing.com for more information. Joe, as always, appreciate the visit. Good luck to you and everybody this afternoon and tomorrow on closing day. We'll talk again.
Yep, awesome. Sounds good. Enjoy a fantastic weekend of racing. A lot of Breeders' Cup winning your ends. And great time of year in horse racing and sports in general. Super excited as we move out of summer and into the fall.
Absolutely. Joe, always appreciate it. Joe Kristofek from Churchill Downs. All right, we will head to another break. When we come back, maybe some news and notes or Ellis Starr. I got a text from Ellis that he may be running a couple of minutes late, but I'll check with him during the break. So we'll see. After, we'll have Ellis on, but we'll see. We'll do some news and notes perhaps or Ellis coming back after the break. We'll talk some Santa Anita with Ellis in a few one way or the other. But stay tuned. Racing Across America continues.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Stone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
But here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Papa. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player, to have a better knowledge of the game, to be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB, become a better horse player.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Always happy to be joined by our friend Ellis Starr. You can find his work at Equibase and Beyond. And I'm thinking, as we were talking in the break there, Ellis, I'm thinking this is the first time we've talked to you since before we were up at Saratoga. So how was your summer? Welcome to Ellis Starr, and how was your summer?
I don't know. Was there a summer? It went by pretty quick. The weather was certainly nice. Yeah, great racing all summer, and, you know, great handle and attendance at Saratoga and Del Mar, and you know, racing is dead, as everybody likes to say. We're just doing great. It's fantastic. It's been a great,
you know, you mentioned summer. That and I'm sure you can appreciate it as well. I've mentioned it a little bit here on the show over the past few weeks, but it's probably worth mentioning again. You know, you talk about Saratoga and Del Mar and whatnot, But a lot of what you would consider B and C venues were coming out. For Assiniboia the other day wrapped up their meet, and they had a crazy meet. And it seemed like all summer long, as I say, these other tracks that would be kind of B and C level were announcing handle figures that just said, wow, racing is having a pretty good year.
Yeah, you know, there was all the concern about the pandemic when a lot of sports bettors had nothing to do in transition, whether they'd stay or not. And there's no way to prove that. And there's some threads on Twitter. I'm a person, I keep down a rabbit hole here, but I hate generalizations. And people say racing's extinct, they're going to go extinct, and it's killing off people. And nothing could be farther from the truth. And, you know, it's just so great to see things as good as they are. Now, maybe we are transitioning to more big days in racing. Certainly the big days at Saratoga, at Churchill, at Del Mar, of course, in Keeneland coming up. You know, Belmont today, for example, and next week with the Breeders' Cup winning your in races are very significant. But overall, whatever it is, people are gravitating towards racing enough that it's very healthy.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, what the handle at Saratoga this year, $850 million, and another very successful Kentucky Downs meet. Oh, I got to ask, do you visit Kentucky Downs when they're open?
I went down there for their big day. It was a pleasure. It was unbelievable. It was better. I haven't been in 2 years, but been almost every year for the last 15, and the place was packed. They're starting to build a hotel. They have a giant outdoor venue and not cheap, like $100 to $150 with all food and drink included. They have a chalet, a beautiful glass chalet for 200-300 people. Mark Falcone and Ron Winchell are horsemen, and they understand the hospitality experience, and everything was first rate, you know, for the track the way it is, and the racing that day was phenomenal. They don't take attendance because they really don't charge, except I think for reserved seating. But I'm going to guess there were 5,000 people there that day, pretty packed on the apron, and just a tremendous day. They're really working on them. They got an extra day this year to six. That's all they can squeeze in because they had two, you know, rain cancellation days that they had to make up, and then Churchill starts, so they don't have a lot of room to wiggle there. But it is really a ton of fun. Everybody that has a chance to go down, you know, towards the end of September, some states before kids go back to school, take a day and do it, and they'll have a hotel on premises soon, too.
Yeah, I have got to get down. Our friend Tim Wilkin, he's in the press box all summer long up at Saratoga, but he went down and helped Jenny Reese after Saratoga cover. Steve Bick went down and did the radio show, so I had both of them on the show to talk a little bit about it. We're showing some pictures. I have to get – and I think just as a racing fan, the racing, it's tough handicapping because some horses just don't take to the surface. There are horses coming in from all over, but those purses are crazy, and you get big competitive fields, and if you handicap it right, you get paid most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, just to that point, I mean, whatever there was, it was 11 or 12 races that day. I had two winners, each paid $26. So 12 to 1, where they would have been normally 4 or 5 to 1. So, you know, 52 backs if I only bet one horse to win per race on 24, 100%. And I feel really lucky that day with it, that the purses are good. They have to go, you know, uphill, downhill, sideways, as well as the stretch itself is 5/16 of a mile pretty much. And so there's a long stretch, and a lot of it's got a slight incline. It takes a lot of horses. However, if you just bet Mike Maker, you're going to make a profit.
Yeah. No, it was fun this year, and as I say, I love to get down.
Let me know when you come. Jeff Chapman from San Anita was there for the first time, and he'd seen it, and he was just amazed at what the track has done and what the track looks like and how it runs.
Yeah, we had Ron Winchell on with us, actually, up at Saratoga, and we're talking a little bit about the track and whatnot, and that, yeah, they've done a great job down there, no question about it. It's now one of the venues that I think, you know, the racing public kind of looks forward to every year because of that little short meet and the big purses and whatnot. Just before we move on to Santa Anita, also, I just had Joe Kristofek on, and we wound up his conversation. I asked him, I'll ask you, did you see the Pennsylvania Derby last week? Thoughts on Taba?
Did I see the Pennsylvania Derby last week?
Yeah, some thoughts on the win from Taba.
It was pretty impressive. We always knew he was talented. He just was so lightly raced coming into the Derby. It was more mental than physical. He ran really well after that, and this was his coming out party. I hope that he stays sound for the Classic. I'm looking forward to seeing a few horses taking on Flightline and see how it comes out.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I think with the win the other day, I think he's in play maybe for the three-year-old Eclipse, depending on how the Breeders' Cup class. Yeah, Epicenter, clearly the leader of the class right now, I think, in most people's minds. But I think that win the other day put Taba in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You've got a horse that's hard about your race, but it's always been, you know, in terms of voting, what have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
End of year takes way precedence over beginning of the year. And, of course, Rich Strike appears to have been a one-hit wonder, no offense, but, you know, we'll see today. And so you've really got the horse that's been consistent all year, Epicenter, versus this horse that's really coming into his own. You know, it depends what happens. I don't know if he runs second in the Classic. If he still gets enough votes, it's real. He probably does.
It's going to be fun. I think it added some nice intrigue to the end of the year in the Breeders' Cup Classic. All right, let's jump in. Speaking of Breeders' Cup, these last couple of weeks, this week, the Santa Anita and over Churchill and whatnot. Next week out at Keeneland, we'll have kind of our last shot at horses who are prepping for the Breeders' Cup. And so let's take a look at some of the action out at Santa Anita. We'll start with the Unzip Me. They're going to run 6.5 on that downhill turf course. I pulled up a replay going back to the middle of August at Del Mar. Number 4 is going to be Brandon's My Lawyer. He's the horse that intrigues me in here at 8-1 off of this win at Del Mar. But Delmona, I thought, was interesting. Last seen right up here at Saratoga, goes into the Jeff Mullins barn. Connie Swingle off the win at Del Mar. Tesserae, I thought, could be interesting in the third start of the year at 12-1. But what are your thoughts on the Unzip Me?
Yeah, I know you're busy prepping for your show, but you must have looked at one of my blogs. Brandon's My Lawyer is my top pick. I mean, when I saw the 8-1, I had it down to Brandon's My Lawyer, Connie Swingle, and Pammy's Ready. Pammy's Ready's 10-1. And Connie Swingle's 3-1, but we'll go off at lower odds. It's been 8-5, 7-5, 3-5 her last three races. But this is restricted to three-year-olds. Brandon's My Lawyer just beat older, even though it was a non-winners of 2 allowance at 5 furlongs. But her only race down the hill back in May 19th when she moved from Baltus to Papa Prodromo after Baltus had some issues, was phenomenal. She came from just off the pace. I don't think the two holes going to hurt her. Dirt race is irrelevant in the grade two Great Lady M. And then she came back to win 5 at Del Mar. So she entered the race in good form. Mario's 2-2 on turf aboard the filly. And she's got the best numbers. 103 Equibase speed figure happens to be the fastest last race figure in the field, even faster than Connie Swingle, who got a 97 winning a classified allowance, also at 5 furlongs at Del Mar, but 103 Brands My Lawyer at the same 5 furlong trip at Del Mar. They both beat older. Pammy's Ready scratched out of a race, I think yesterday, opening day, allowance race to run in this little tougher race. Maybe not, because, again, this is three-year-olds only. And she ran second to Brands My Lawyer. She was 9-2 that day. Brands My Lawyer was 5-2, and now they're 8-1 and 10-1, which is just ridiculous. I know the morning line is based on how the public's in the bet, so I get it. Connie Swingle's, you know, never off the board in 8 races with 5 wins. But I'm looking to make a win bet on Brands My Lawyer, a slightly smaller win bet on Pammy's Ready, and then box the 3 and hope that maybe Connie Swingle finishes 3rd. This is a really good race. It's the 9th race at Santa Lee, the Unzip Me Stakes.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I'm happy to hear you also are on Brandon's My Lawyer. That adds to my confidence, and now we have to keep our fingers crossed on that 8-1 morning line holding up in there. All right, a little bit earlier, the Eddie D, 3-year-olds and up, going the 6.5 on the downhill turf course. Let's see if we have a meeting of the minds here, because I pulled up a June 12th race from Santa Anita. The number 2 Air Force Red is going to be the winner here. That was the last time this horse was seen at Santa Anita on this 6.5 downhill turf course, which I think horses can perhaps be specialists in, so I like to see a win over it. Went the mile at Del Mar last time in the Del Mar Mile, had the lead before fading, but I thought Air Force Red was interesting. Gregorian Chant, obviously, particularly with that bullet workout coming in for Phil D'Amato, a player, and Goliad, I thought, also coming out of miles at Del Mar, could be a little bit of a player in here as well. What are your thoughts on the Eddie D?
We're a little close and a little different.
Okay.
There's a horse running, two, three horses. We'll get to the San Diego Sprint Championship. Two horses from trainer Amador Sanchez, and one in this race, Dubai Key. And these horses are all loaded for Bear. Sanchez shipped horses in on the string. He's one of the ones that talked Hector Berrios to move his tack from Gulfstream, and he had a tremendous Del Mar meet. I mean, this guy just relaxes. He never gets flustered. I've seen him in boxes turning in the stretch and even almost a 16th to go, and he just waits for a hole. He doesn't try and move out. He sticks it. He doesn't get cheeky, and he doesn't get caught in a mistake of waiting for a hole. Dubai Key was very good in his native Argentina, winning 5 of 10, and he's 3 for 4 since coming to the U.S., moving up first allowance condition, second allowance condition, classified allowance condition, and then fourth in the Green Flash last time out, and that was interesting because he had the rail. But now he's back outside, which is where he runs his best. He just didn't do well from the rail. 47 3/5, third of 97, almost a bullet. Since then, I don't think I'll have any problem with the downhill. He went 7 furlongs in Argentina on a left-handed course, so this, you know, kind of a right-handed downhill, pretty much still a left-handed track. And he's very strong. He opens at 6-1. That race on August 5th at 5 at Del Mar got a 109 equal base speed figure. Again, top figure in the field this year by any horse. So he's very good. He doesn't actually need to lead, but he's probably going to sit right off the pace. The two Air Force Red you mentioned, absolutely, he's going to go. He's going to be the one that Dubai Key has to pass to win. His back-to-back downhill wins in April and June were pretty good. He went wire to wire. He does lose Juan Hernandez because Johnny V rode him in the Del Mar Mile, but Hernandez was a regular rider. He loses Hernandez to Goliad, but he picks up Victor Espinosa, who rode him to the first of the two wins down the hill. And he won from the two posts at this trip, so I'm not worried about it. Again, the cutting back from a mile, he might actually be a little more off the pace this time, but he won at 6.5 when they run him at San Anita on the flat when they don't run the downhill. He won from off the pace in March. So he's good. He's 5-1. So 6-1, 5-1. And the Gregorian chant, you got to use him as a third contender for exactas and multi-race bets. Certainly, I love the bullet, 58-3 you mentioned. He likes the San Diego Turf Course, 5-11. He's run down the hill, I think it was just twice, fourth last year, but he's in better form this year. And then he won October to the end of March, so almost 6 months off down the hill. And then three tough races since, shipping to Belmont with the Jaipur, third in the turf sprint at Churchill. The fact that he ran the mile was solid. Now he's going to cut back. He's going to be the one closing fastest of all. So I think those are the three that make the race. But Dubai Key is going to be really tough, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's a fun race, no question about it. All right, and let's move on a little earlier to, as you mentioned a moment ago, the Santa Anita Sprint Championship. And in here, I went back and showed actually a third-place finish at Del Mar on August 27th. It's going to be How Be It. The number two, Fashionably Fast, is the winner. The number four, Let's Get Lucky, runs second. But number seven, How Be It, runs third. I'm wondering if this close-up, it's a neck margin. I'm wondering if this close-up kind of closing third-place finish bodes well for this afternoon in a race with a lot of speed to shoot at, I think, or enough speed to shoot at, let's put it that way, that maybe How Be It can do what he did in this race we just looked at and kind of stalk a little bit behind the speed and maybe make a little bit of a late run. CZ Rocket, boy, the 8-year-old millionaire, always intriguing. Forbidden Kingdom steps up against older company this afternoon. That may be a little bit of an obstacle. Kid Corleone, lightly raced, but another 3-year-old that I think is intriguing. Your thoughts on the Sprint Championship?
This is a heck of a race to talk about, Seth, for sure, everything you mentioned. My concern with How Be It, not only was he a claimer, but the fact is the two times he ran in graded stakes, last year to Pat O'Brien, last August at Del Mar, off a big win, and he just ran horribly.
Yeah.
And then this year, the Bing Crosby. I don't think he's graded stakes caliber, but at 8-1, I'm not going to talk you off in one bit. But I am going to talk you and people off both favorites. I do not like Forbidden Kingdom and CZ Rocket. CZ Rocket's an 8-year-old now. He's won 3 of his last 10. He's not the same horse he was as a 5- and 6-year-old when he was winning these races. not anymore, in my opinion. The classified allowance win on July 23rd was nice, but it doesn't win here. And then he had no excuse in the Pat O'Brien. And also, without Lasix, he's just not as good. Last five race out, Lasix, 8th, 7th, 3rd, 2nd, 3rd. So, unfortunately, it looks like he really needs the added edge of the Lasix. And they're also taking blinkers off for a stakes, which I always question, why would you do that in the stakes? It really means you don't know what to do with a horse that's just not running the way you expect. Forbidden Kingdom certainly has the talent, but if you look at his, you know, I circle the first call in my PPs, and he's got ones all the way through. And Kid Corleone towards the outside is the same thing. They both can run 44. And as you said, that's the speed. Those two go gun it, and I think other horses come. I am really, I would say, not in love, but I'm enamored with both of Sanchez's horses here. Again, the guy brought a string to Del Mar, and they ran big. Toto Fino won his only U.S. start for Sanchez on September 3rd, coming from just off the pace. He ran very well. He's going to be a lot tighter, second off a five-month layoff. And the horse was 10 for 14 in his native Chile, and he's a heck of a sprinter. I like the one furlong cutback as well. Super Ocho was really impressive in his U.S. debut in Mountaineer after winning 4 of 12 in his native Chile, mostly on turf. But they're very impressive winning by 10. And then the Green Flash handicap, which we just talked about earlier when talking about the Unzip Me, he got kind of bumped early and rushed up from 10th to 4th to 3rd, lost all his gas. Ayuso wrote him that day. Barrios gets back on. Barrios chose, I'm assuming he had the choice of Super Ocho or Toto Fino, and he chose Super Ocho. I mean, Barrios and Sanchez back, including Gulfstream, the last 20 months going back to January 1st of 2021, I mean, they won 30 out of 120 races together. Just a great team. He's working well since. So you get 10-1 on Super Ocho, 7-1 on Toto Fino. Bad favorites was Forbidden Kingdom and CC Rocket as far as win bets go, because Forbidden Kingdom has a pace problem. If Kid Corleone runs, CC Rocket, I think, is a little bit over the top here. So I'm looking at win bets here on both those horses, and I'm really looking forward to see if I'm right about this race. But again, back to you. Howbeit, also benefits from pace, and he'll be coming late.
I'll throw your two in with mine on an exacta and see if we can make a little magic happen. I like that. All right, let's go over and get a couple of opinions on the Churchill closing Saturday weekend stakes races. We'll start with the Lucas Classic. We talked with Joe Christofek a little bit about this race, and when we did, I pulled up the Whitney and watched Happy Saver and Hot Rod Charlie run second and third. For your conversation, I thought people might want to see Art Collector in the Charlestown Classic, so we'll watch Art Collector, the number 4 horse down at Charlestown, get it done just a few weeks back. I'm tilting a little bit towards Hot Rod Charlie in here, but I said to Joe, I'm really intrigued to see what Rich Strike can do returning to Churchill Downs. Obviously, Happy Saver and Art Collector are players as well. What are your thoughts in the Lucas Classic?
Well, Rich Strike, you know, I mean, what he did was phenomenal, but I'm sorry, unless he proves something else, he's still a one-hit wonder to me. But you're getting 6-1, I wouldn't talk you off him. Art Collector, the Charlestown Classic, already turned out to be a key race because Mind Control came back to win, and another horse came back to win as that race, and he's won at Churchill, certainly no knock on him, and he's the one that's going to go and play Come Catch Me. The question is, Hot Rod Charlie, I mean, he's going to sit second. I don't see him not winning this race after that. It's kind of a yawner from betting perspective because he's 8-5, but he tries every time. I think this is it. He's on a good pattern after the Dubai World Cup, which, of course, was a big race when he ran second to Country Grammar, who's running in the awesome again today. Off that layoff, you know, a couple months, he ran second to Mind Control, who we just talked about, who ran third Art Collector and won again. And he got a 118 echo base speed figure. Then in the Whitney, even though he was beaten ahead for second, he improved to a 122. That's top in the field by a boatload, except for Happy Saver. I think they're tied, and then everybody else is whatever. Art Collector's 104, 113, 120 last year in the Woodward. His best may not be good enough to win here, even though he does have that pace edge. So, I mean, as far as the race goes, I think Hot Rod Charlie gets the best trip. Hopefully he can go by Art Collector. You know, from a fan perspective, I want this horse to win. I mean, it's been kind of a while, the Penn Sand Derby, at least in North America, since he's won a big race. you know, in the Haskell last year when he got DQ'd. And so, you know, I want him to win, but I think he sits behind Art Collector and gets up. I think Happy Saver closes for second. Art Collector, again, has a shot to go wire to wire, but I just don't think he's fast enough. And sorry, Rich Strike, I don't mean to insult you, but I don't think you have a chance to win.
Yeah, I'm pretty much in the same boat. I mean, I have it Hot Rod Charlie over Happy Saver over Art Collector, and then Rich Strike in fourth. But as they say, I'll be interested to, because I thought the fourth in the Travers was okay. It was a little bit of a rebound for Rich Strike, and I'm interested to see what he does on the return to Churchill. Because I will admit, after the Derby, I said just what you said, one hit wonder. That seemed to be validated in the Belmont, but he ran okay in the Travers, so I'm interested to see. All right, let's go one race earlier, the ACAC. Get some thoughts here. I talked about that one earlier with Joe Kristofek, and I showed the Nayrud, where Speaker's Corner ran second to Life is Good. And you look at the company lines, yeah, the Life is Good second place finish, three starts back for Speaker's Corner, was behind Flightline. But, boy, the last, the Pat O'Brien. So I'm going to play around a little bit with Untreated, who is 3-for-3 at the mile distance. I'm going to pull up the New Year's Eve race from Aqueduct, which was the last time Untreated ran this mile distance. He'll be the number six horse here, getting it done by 3/4 of a length. I'm going to tilt slightly in that direction and take a little bit of a pop against Speaker's Corner, who I have right underneath. But what are your thoughts on the ACAC?
You know, so Untreated's kind of on my list. I'll get to Micah Terriers in a second. James Quinn, who's written so many books on handicapping, one of the great authors of the last, you know, 20 years of last century and the first 10 years of this year, he wrote another book. He always said that these distances, cutting back, was really important. And I don't disagree, from 10 furlongs to 8 and back to the one turn mile. I just don't know, again, in this field that he gets it. I will say, Speaker's Corner, boy, similar to, you know, you got the same issue we talked about with Happy Saver, where you see Olympiad, Flightline, Life is Good, and they're not in the race. Oh, he's going to win. Speaker's Corner, you see Flightline, Life is Good. Oh, he's going to win. Then, of course, you have to decide about Pat O'Brien, but I don't like even money. I don't like the rail. I don't like his last three races. I'm taking a stand against him, which means a lot of value if he's anywhere near his even money morning line. The horses I like most of all are Silver Prospector and Injunction. And this is one of my blogs that people can go to my at UberCapper Twitter and see the links to those blogs. Silver Prospector won the Kentucky Jockey Club as a two-year-old at Churchill back in 2019. Yes, that bad since he's earned $1 million too. In the last race, the West Virginia Governors, I'm not sure what Brian Hernandez was thinking, but maybe he just got not a good position because he's usually fourth or fifth early. It's the first time Hernandez ridden him. Hernandez just moved him from eighth to second or to third really early in the race, and that took a lot of gas out of him. Then he just ran even as Folsom, you know, won that race with a rally on the turn from fifth. And two before that at the Steve Stetson Mile, so it was a two-turn mile, but still a mile. He ran his best race in probably a year or two. And I think getting Santana, who rode him way back earlier in his career and in the Kentucky Jockey Club, I think Silver Prospector runs back to the Steve Sexton Mile. And that race with a 112 figure could get the win here. And he's 12-1. So I'm looking at him to, you know, representative race as opposed to a lot of his other races recently. And then you've got Injunction, who's one of the couple four-year-olds in the race. If you toss out his turf race, he's got 4 wins in 3 seconds in 10 races on dirt. He likes the mile. He was second to 3 Technique in the Nitz Go, and then he won the Cowboy Jones at Ellis Park, which, as people know, goes around a hook. So it's not really a two-turn race. It's more of a one-turn race. And he battled head-and-head from the start all the way to the finish, just battle and still held. I mean, that's some mental toughness there. And he got a 106 career best, but he's a four-year-old. He was actually entered, we've talked about Kentucky Downs earlier, Injunction was entered in the Million Stakes on the grass. And he had run on the grass once before, not run well. And I like the fact that Carlo Vacarezza scratched him to go in this race. Side note, by the way, if you ever go to Lexington, Carlo Vacarezza has an Italian and French restaurant. I'm not plugging in, but they're really good. And I think he has one in Florida as well. So besides being a horseman, who had Little Mike, of course, and many others, he's a great restaurateur. So Injunction, just coming off that race, I think he's had enough time off, you know, almost 2 months from that hard race. Gerardo Corrales, who had a huge meet at Kentucky Downs, is on him, and he's 10-1. So I'm looking at 12-1 and 10-1 here. I'm probably going to bet on both to win and then play a dollar exact with everybody over them instead of a place bet, because I don't think Seeker's Corner beats them. In that case, I'm going to get a lot more for my exact back wheel than I would for a place bet.
I like it. I'll play around a little bit with that one at the prices myself. Ellis, as always, appreciate the thoughts and the visit. And again, pulled you up to talk a little Santa Anita, because with the Santa Anita beat starting, if folks go to the Santa Anita website, they can find some selections for you every day at the Santa Anita website. And with Keeneland coming up, I'm assuming there'll be some Keeneland selections during the meet as well.
Yep, I'm doing daily selections for Keeneland for one race of the day, I call it, Santa Anita, Woodbine. And then if you follow me over Capper on Twitter, there are some blogs covering, for example, the three we just talked about, Santa Anita in writing, and also the TACAC. So, yeah, keep them busy with some tracks that are happy to support what I have to say.
Excellent. And we support what you have to say as well. And
we got
some fun opinions this morning, and appreciate the visit as always. And again, glad to have you back in the mix as we have come back into the studio from our live from the backstretch summer up in Saratoga, which is always fun, but it's great to get plugged in with the regulars as well. So once again, Ellis, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
Thanks for having me. Everybody go make a lot of money today. I sure hope so.
Appreciate it. Ellis Starr, as I say, you can find his work at Equibase and beyond, and check out his Twitter feed as well, at Uber Capper. All right, I'm going to keep rolling here because we're getting close to the top of the hour, and I got a couple of replays that I wanted to show. And, you know, one is kind of unfortunate and one's kind of fun. We'll look at the results of the Oklahoma Derby from last Sunday. But before we do that, Twitter was ablaze yesterday with kind of a little controversy over in Europe as one of the top riders over there, Christoph Soumillon. Boy, they don't waste any time. It was a Group 3, I believe, a Group 3 race yesterday in France. And Soumillon, we'll have the replay here. You're going to look in the back of the pack, and Soumillon, oh, we picked it up just as it was happening. Soumillon comes over, and he elbows the jockey net. You can see it. Oh, and the jock falls off, and you can see tumbles there. Subsequently, that jock was okay, great to report, and the horse was okay. And you can see Soumillon, and he admitted. Soumillon eventually apologized and subsequently admitted, you know, I came out and I was just trying to get my position. So I did elbow him to let him know I'm here. And subsequently the horse moved and he explained it like, and you would have to think and hope he didn't mean for that to happen. But as I say, stewards don't kid around. They act quickly over there. He got a 2-month ban for that, which perfectly justifiable. And he said, I'm going to accept my the punishment here and the suspension. He will be allowed to ride tomorrow in the ARC. So Soumillon, again, one of the top riders internationally, it was an ugly looking incident to come out and elbow the guy off his horse. But as I say, Soumillon did kind of recognize, wasn't good, I apologize, taking the suspension. But once again, I will reiterate, they don't kid around at the speed. This was a race yesterday, and by the end of the day, 2-month ban for Christoph Soumillon there. And again, Twitter was ablaze, as Twitter typically is, but this one probably justifiably so, with folks playing the replay. And, you know, before the stewards' decision was made, folks saying, hopefully they come down hard. I think 2 months, I think they did come down hard. A lot of people thought should have come down harder, but it was not a good-looking incident, that's for sure. But on a happier note, also wanted to pull up from last Sunday, the Oklahoma Derby out at Remington Park, because it was won by Rattle and Roll, Ken McPeak runner, that I kind of liked earlier this year. This horse is a 2-year-old, won the Breeders' Futurity at Keeneland, going to be the number 5 horse here, as you can see, holding off King Ottoman. The chart margin winds up to be a length and a half. Didn't go off as the favorite. Best Actor went off as the favorite for Brad Cox and Gary and Mary West. Best Actor had been 3-for-4, including a win in the Smarty Jones at Parks, which is typically kind of a prep for the Pennsylvania Derby. Maybe they looked at that field and thought, you know, hey, we'll take our shot for the 400K in Oklahoma instead. But Best Actor winds up no better than third as the even money favorite. Rattle and Roll goes off as the second choice. And again, as I said, I had kind of liked this horse early in the career, won the Breeders' Futurity, but subsequently came back in the Fountain of Youth and ran sixth, the Louisiana Derby fourth, the Bluegrass ran sixth, and seemed to take a while to get back to that two-year-old form as they were a little more maybe judicious picking their spots. But now has put a couple of derbies together and then another one a little bit earlier, going back to July 2nd at Churchill, won the American Derby. Then was seventh in the Indiana Derby, but went over and won the St. Louis Derby on August 20th and then the Oklahoma Derby most recently. So this is a horse that, again, making that kind of second-level derby trek around the country. American Derby, St. Louis Derby, and then last Sunday the Oklahoma Derby. And I'm guessing with the 240, we are right about at $1 million. So they're picking their spots nicely for this one. Again, had to find their level. They found the level. But again, that finding that level has led to 5 wins in 13 career starts and just about $1 million in purse earnings for the Ken McPeak trainee. Again, last Sunday at Remington in the Oklahoma Derby. All right. Mentioned earlier, I have this note here, but I did mention it earlier on the handicapper's report. It looks like things are moving forward with that proposed new track in Massachusetts. And again, it's between Springfield and Worcester, and I charted it out a couple hours probably driving time from Albany. But the latest news that just came out yesterday, I think, they had to apply for dates by August 1st. They did that. So it seems like things are moving in the right direction. It seems like the people behind this are enthusiastic. But there isn't a facility, and I don't think they've even secured the rights for the facility as far as getting any permission from the locality involved or whatnot. But it seems like an interesting idea. It'll be a Kentucky Downs type of meet next year and going into the future. Short, all turf. The facility itself, they're looking at some kind of overall equine facility for layups and rehabs and maybe some breeding there out in Massachusetts. But next year they're looking for 2 days. And it sounds interesting because the 2 days they're looking for next year would be between the end of Saratoga and the opening of Belmont or Belmont at Aqueduct, which I think is again next fall too. It would be a couple of days right in the middle there, which you would think would attract some very familiar names, some New York-based outfits, so it could be a lot of fun. They're looking for $750,000 as the purse for each of the 2 days. So it could be fun. We'll keep our eyes and ears open as far as Massachusetts racing, but again, maybe things will return in Massachusetts as far as thoroughbred racing, of course, which hasn't been seen since Suffolk closed, two or three years back. So, again, it's moving along. It's not a done deal, but it seems like everybody has the proper enthusiasm that it could wind up happening. And, again, if it does, a couple hours up the turnpike and might be a fun couple of days to head to the races in between Saratoga and Belmont opening maybe late next summer, early-ish September. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for this Sunday edition, or Saturday edition of Racing Across America. I said Sunday because I want to bring up Sunday tomorrow. There is an early opening here at the Clubhouse Racebook. We'll have the ARC tomorrow, and it'll be at 10:05, so it'll be during Racing Across America tomorrow morning, but we'll show that and all of those races from France here on the network. But if you'd like to come down to the Clubhouse Racebook tomorrow to watch the ARC, and again, it's 10:05, we will be opening at the Clubhouse Racebook at 9:30. There will be some breakfast available, so you can take advantage of that. But also, Saints and the Vikings, I'm pretty sure it's the Saints and the Vikings. I had it written down. But they have an NFL game over in Europe tomorrow as well that'll kick off in that morning period. So you can come here, watch the ARC, watch some NFL football, And the subsequent stakes races after the ARC, they have another four really nice stakes races, typically on the international racing side of things, coming up tomorrow as well. There's a field of 20 scheduled for the ARC, so it should be a really fun betting event. So again, tomorrow, you know, you can watch and wager here on the network and via Capital OTB Bet, but you can also come down and enjoy the action here at the Clubhouse Racebook. We open at 9:30. There'll be a little breakfast available. You can also watch the football game as well, and then stick around for the afternoon action of racing and football, as always, on a Sunday afternoon, right here, Clubhouse Racebook tomorrow, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. On the flip side, today, you can stick around because I'll be back in about, probably about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. We'll take a look at some of the nice Saturday action, which we have been talking about all morning. It should be fun. Oh, and today we're going to stay open a little later at the Clubhouse Racebook. It's not a big amount of time, but if you come down to the Racebook tonight, you want to watch Santa Anita, we'll stay open through the entire Santa Anita card. So keep that in mind as well for a little bit later on today. One more reminder, Gulfstream Park, the Rainbow today is a mandatory pay. Mandatory pay for the Rainbow today at Gulfstream. Oh, and as Joe Kristovec mentioned, tomorrow, closing day at Churchill, mandatory is tomorrow at Churchill in the various wagers. But today it's a mandatory at Gulfstream, so keep that in mind. If you haven't looked, maybe take a look at their Rainbow today down at Gulfstream Park. Seth Merrill, Racing Across America for Saturday morning. As always, really appreciate your tuning in. Hopefully we tossed out some good ideas for the afternoon, and we will be back this afternoon, as I say, just about 12:30 or so with OTB Live. So we'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.